Apostrophe. No, not the mark of punctuation. The literary term. Know what it is? How about paradox? Sure on that? Chiasmus. My favorite. People enjoy it when they spot it. But do you know the term when you spot it? Can I stump you with these? Polysyndeton. Epistrophe. These are all enhancements that can help your writing sing on the page. That's an implied metaphor, by the way. Also an enhancement. Enhancements from anastrophes to zeugmas. We start the series this week on The Right Focus. Welcome to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers, newbies and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Writers, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, grab a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. In the forest of words that we writers grow, blazed trails mark the way to our destination. Without those trails, without paths leading down to the sun-sparkled streams, without the yellow brushstroke painted on tree after tree, we might lose our direction and our sanity. We writers depend on that clear route. We can have a mental map, yet thickly leaved trees will obscure our guidance post. We know our crow-flying direction, but vine-covered thickets and distracting cascades force us off path. The blazes prevent confusion, unless a storm brought down the blazed tree. Then we're lost. Those sentences? Well, most writers will recognize the extended hiking metaphor. Many will spot the inversion and alliteration. A few will appreciate the anaphora, anosesis, and zeugma, even when they're not familiar with those terms. This is sentence craft. Enhancements. Controlled use creates appreciative readers. Overblown use drives readers away. If you've ever wanted a handful of tricks to sprinkle onto the page, another metaphor, then enhancements are for you. Like magicians, writers use tricks to keep the audience engaged. Adept word magicians use just enough sparkling trickery to draw readers through one work and on to the next. Sentence craft, enhancements, from easy imagery to involved structures, is essential for the poet. Bloggers and other nonfiction writers will find it a necessary marketing tool, distinguishing them from their competition. Speech writers and great broadcast journalists use these literary and rhetorical devices constantly to make their spoken words become memorable. With fiction, writers paint their expositions and their settings and their character tags, capturing readers who may not even recognize the sweeping stroke of a magical word wand. Enhancements, which is the focus of my guidebook Discovering Sentence Craft, can be fascinating adventures into an unknown forest. Tricks can renew a veteran writer's love of words and sentences flowing onto the page. In small offerings, of course, too many tricks glaze our readers' eyes. Most examples for the enhancement series will come from the realm of poetry. Poems provide quick examples, while prose may need an entire paragraph or entire pages to work the trick. The realm of prose can learn much from poetry. We'll cover figurative and interpretive concepts as well as the structural elements that build meaning, emphasis, and memory. They are figurative language, interpretive language, inversions, repetitions, oppositions, and sequences. Concept and execution, the two sides of enhancements. Well, we could call it artistry with words, but that's a third metaphor and one too many. Writing is not an inherent gift. It's a skill-based craft which can be learned and practiced. I'm not alone in thinking this. Aristotle, way back in classical antiquity, was the first person to disagree with Plato, who thought talent was everything. And Aristotle knew that it was more than talent. It was also craft. Artists learn composition, perspective, depth, proportion, and shading. A baseball player learns infield and outfield, pitching versus throwing, batting and bunting. An electrician learns reading blueprints, voltage and current circuits, outlets, and panels. A bit of natural talent gives us an inclination, but craft makes the talent shine. A writer needs much more than grammar and spelling, reading widely, learning concepts and structures, and practicing them will open the doors for anyone who wants to improve. First, let's cover basic language information. Dichotomies rule the world. In, out, on, off, straight, curved, clear, confused, agreement, argument. These are all dichotomies. Language has its own dichotomies. Formal versus informal. Accepted versus slang. Periodic versus cumulative. Serious versus pun. Literal versus figurative. Idea versus structure. And concept versus execution. Wordcraft sparkles across all the language dichotomies. It enriches all writing. Even spoken events had birth in the written world. The dichotomous choice between formal and informal opens many books about language use. Formal language appears in documents for court, such as legal briefs, ceremonial occasions, such as wedding invitations, and official business, such as contracts. Informal language invades all other realms of communication. The more conversational, the more acceptable, we think. However, unless depicting conversation, informal still follows the rules of standard English, which simply means that it follows the forms accepted everywhere. People with small worlds do not understand that color versus color with a U does not represent misspelling, only different forms of English. British Standard English and American Standard English have variations as well as many rules in common. Informality accepts colloquialisms, idioms, and dialect. Use guys or a y'all, and slang, expletives and scatological references intended for shock value, depend on the intended audience. That's the only rule to remember when choosing between formal and informal. The intended audience. Nothing else matters. Here are selections from two major American poets of the early 20th century using different styles, one more formal, the other informal, both wholly acceptable. First, here's an excerpt from Amy Lowell's Generations with an instructional tone. You are like the stem of a young beech tree, straight and swaying, breaking out in golden leaves. Your shadow is no shadow, but a scattered sunshine, and at night you pull the sky down to you and hood yourself in stars. For an informal example, we have T.S. Eliot's The Journey of the Magi, highly conversational in tone. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey, the ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. Then we came to a tavern with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door, dicing for pieces of silver. Both of these excerpts use strong imagery, alliteration, and repetition. Lowell uses a simile, while Eliot has synecdoche. She has anaphora, he has allusions. Personal preference for language formality depends only upon personal taste. We use words like lyrical to describe beautiful writing. Beauty, though, is a matter of taste, and taste changes over time. I remember loving the strong imagery and symbolism that filled the elaborate lines by Edgar Allan Poe and Amy Lowell in my early decades. Now I prefer Robert Frost and T.S. Eliot for their spare words and cleverly hidden meanings. While I appreciate Picasso, my taste runs to Jackson Pollock and Salvador Dali. I can admire Mozart, but Debussy is the composer whose works I collect. The aesthetic distinction keeps me reading Edna St. Vincent Millay and Ernest Hemingway, but not Elizabeth Barrett Browning or William Faulkner. Different tastes are acceptable and desired, which is the reason no wordsmith should copy other writers, even though they can be used for practice. The Roman Horace said, "Nothing is beautiful from every point of view." That works for enhancements as well. A structural device may charm you while it irks others. You may love creating extended metaphors, only to have someone else dislike them. That's an important point to remember. Too many word tricks will cause readers' eyes to glaze over. When writers read other writers, we look at much more than the words conveying the ideas. The little black marks are magical tricks we want to understand, practice, and tuck into our own magician's cloak. We should display our acquired tricks only when they support the meaning of those little black marks. Unfortunately, we often exhibit them out of personal vanity, exhibitionism. As Faulkner said, in writing, we must kill all our darlings. He wasn't just talking about characters, you know. Every choice for any communication always depends upon our intended purpose and audience. The choice between periodic and cumulative sentences creates a proving example. Both the periodic and cumulative sentence forms are extremely long. They are taught as if they're models for budding writers. They are not. The periodic means that the sentence launches, the subject is followed by modifying phrases and clauses, then after several lines of text, the verb and predicate occur, offering the sentence's end. The base sentence elements of verb and complement end the sentence at the period. The cumulative sentence presents the base sentence elements of subject, verb, and complement immediately, followed by an accumulation of modifying words, phrases, and subordinate clauses until the writer reaches the end of the sentence. The sentence is complete before the modifying elements are accumulated. Writers of the previous centuries used both forms often. Such long sentences do have their place in modern writing. Having taught advanced placement courses, I believe the words are pushed onto students more as a grammar test rather than a writing pattern to emulate. Writers supposedly use the periodic to increase tension and suspense as the reader anticipates the sentence end. The cumulative displays elaborated detail, piling one upon another. Thus, it can exhibit luxuriousness, increasing confusion, a building morass, or a horde of options. Master orator Winston Churchill provides examples of both types. First is the periodic, beginning with the understood subject for the verbs let and bear. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that, if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour. The next example begins with a cumulative section of an extended compound complex sentence. On the night of the 10th of May, 1940, at the outset of this mighty battle, I acquired the chief power in the state, which henceforth I wielded in ever-growing measure for 5 years and 3 months of world war, at the end of which time, all our enemies having surrendered unconditionally or being about to do so, I was immediately dismissed by the British electorate from all further conduct of their affairs. The first Churchill example is pure oratory, ending with a short yet memorable sentence, this was their finest hour. The second comes from his memoir. Written prose can tolerate the extended confusion of the cumulative sentence, which Churchill must have experienced when the voters dismissed him from his position as Prime Minister after the Allied victory that concluded World War II. See how the word trick supports the content? Artistry with words is not dependent on the subject matter. The only dependence is the writer's commitment to the craft. The highly talented few are set apart only by their awareness, their language fluency from reading widely, and their willingness to use time as a resource for practice and the necessary craft development. Only perspective is inherent, and even that is teachable. The most important dichotomous pair is denotation and connotation. Denotation is the dictionary definition of a word, from Latin meaning to note. Connotation is the mental images associated with a word, from Latin com, meaning with, and note, meaning to note, thus with to note, or to note with, as the image we mentally note with a word's definition. Old versus antique, for example. These are similar in meaning, but the mental image changes. We already know that not every synonym means exactly the same thing. Synonyms of the color red have varying shades. Maroon, persimmon, scarlet, and crimson are all different colors. Relevant has the synonyms of germane, material, and apropos, among several others. As Merriam-Webster tells us, relevant means a traceable, significant, logical connection. Germane, additionally, may imply a fitness for or appropriateness to the situation or occasion. Material implies so close a relationship that it cannot be dispensed with without serious alteration of the case, and apropos suggests being both relevant and opportune. Now we also remember that many words have positive and negative connotations. An example is as easy as cheap versus expensive. Look at exotic, foreign, strange, and chat, talk, babble, as well as venerable, old, decrepit, and pet, animal, beast. We writers fall into mistakes with connotations when we seek an interesting synonym to replace a bland, tasteless word. Be certain of a new-to-you meaning, even by checking a word's etymology before deciding to use it. That advice holds throughout this series on enhancements. The intention is primarily emphasis, not exhibitionism. Wordsmithery always supports meaning. The violence of a deed is not conveyed in flowery language, but in hard, thudding syllables. Let the craft suit the meaning. The more we practice, the more we understand the effect. The more we see the effect, the more we understand its power, and understand that it can stand alone without need for more words. Remember, only the intended audience is important. Aesthetics is another consideration. Taste determines whether someone likes our writing or not. Overblown language can be a turnoff for the audience. Offer your word tricks sparingly. The content's final form will determine the use of a particular word trick, and individual words and their connotative meanings will affect the reception of our word tricks. Exhibitionism is not the goal. Practice with the connotations of synonyms this week. Pick 25 words, each on a separate page of the current manuscript, and select a different synonym to increase the connotative load for the word. Next week, we discuss figurative language. Easiest to understand and craft, and hide as a word trick, are metaphors, direct and implied. To help understand metaphors, we start with similes. Then we have the other main types of figurative language. Inspiration for this week comes from Charles Lamb talking about Lycidas and his learning that the poem was crafted, reworked, and enhanced. He said, "I thought of Lycidas as a full-grown beauty, as springing up with all its parts absolute, till, in an evil hour, I was shown the original copy of it in the Library of Trinity, kept like a treasure to be proud of. I wish they had thrown them into the Cam, or sent them into the Irish Channel. How it staggered me to see the fine things in their ore, interlined, corrected, as if their words were mortal, alterable, displaceable at pleasure, as if they might have been otherwise and just as good. As if inspiration were made up of parts, and these fluctuating, successive, indifferent. I will never go into the workshop of any great artist again." I don't know why he was so upset, except maybe he has the upset of every new writer who discovers that inspiration may give you the idea, but the words on the page can be crafted to enhance their meaning. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by Emma Lee from Writers Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at winkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mind your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.